Welcome to the CineScare podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Speak.
And I am also one of your hosts, Joe Jans.
And of course, joining us as always is the super fan, Mr. Mark Piscati.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me back.
The cacophony of comedy.
The cacophony of comedy.
What?
Yeah. The incubator of boners.
Yeah.
A laboratory of verbal gaffes.
Here we go.
I guess we should come up with one each time.
The guy we call Not Brian. It's Mark.
don't bring Brian. Him up. You guys can't bring him up every episode.
We can and might.
Brian says otherwise.
Okay. So, what the heck is happening behind me? Anyway.
You have a large feline behind you that's causing all sorts of distractions.
I know. It sure is. Anyway, we're back again, and we are now in December.
Is that a hint?
Oh, my God. That was horrible.
So.
Maybe we should play it backwards.
I want a hippopotamus for Christmas.
No. Mark, no.
What?
God.
No.
Of all the songs, all the
No,
Christmas
that's
songs,
the best one.
It's the worst Christmas song ever. It's right up there with Paul McCartney's Christmas song. That simply having a wonderful Christmas time.
Oh, well, what about Last Christmas? Wham.
That's better than Hippopotamus.
Hippopotamus is pretty good.
I like every day must feel like a holiday. You guys know that one?
No.
What's that?
You will. I'll put it in there.
Who sang that one?
Lots of people. It's an old soul Christmas song from the 70s.
Wow. Well, I'll be interested to hear that one on our next episode. Or actually, this episode. So we are back once again, and we have a theme, of course, and that is The Exorcist, which I'm actually kind of surprised it took us this long to get around to this one, because this is, you know, one of the great classics of all time. But before we get there, we have been busy, yeah. Before we get there, though, let's talk about what we've been watching up to this point in the last couple of weeks. Joe, what have you watched? Anything that is non-theme related?
Blazing Saddles.
Did you watch it?
Yeah, actually, I did. I'm sure I watched something else scary, but the only movie I can think of recently that I watched was Blazing Saddles.
It's a great
movie. This is why I log them in Letterbox, and then I can glance at my Letterbox when we're on here, and I remember what I've watched.
I'm usually falling asleep through half of them. So.
I got to get into Letterboxd. I see a lot of people talking about Letterboxd. It seems like a pretty cool app.
It's fantastic. It's a great way to log the movies that you watched and to, you know, rate them and everything. And then I keep a running list of the movies I've watched each year, so that I can kind of refer to them as far as what my top 10 is going to be, which our next episode is going to be our top 10 horror movies of the year.
Okay.
So anyway, it's just an easy way to keep track of what you've been watching. So,
cool.
Well, Mark, did you watch anything that was not theme related?
Well, I watched, The Wind. It's a 2018, Netflix. It's on Netflix. Have you seen that?
Yeah. Is that the one that's out like in the Old West or whatever? Yeah.
Yeah. I just recently watched it. It's a supernatural thriller set in the Western frontier in the late 1800s. It's a story of a wife left on her own while her husband travels back to Illinois on some business. She deals with isolation and starts to have horrific...
Her husband travels back to Illinois.
He was
from Chicago, by the way. I just
want Cicero's.
She deals with isolation. She has some horrific flashbacks of what had transpired before. There's lots of flashbacks going back and forth. I actually really enjoyed it. I like Westerns, so it's a nice little treat having it be a supernatural, I guess you can say, ghost story. I mean, it's not the best I've seen, but I really enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty good.
I actually liked that one. I thought it was pretty good too.
Yeah, the music's great with the violins and nice. The acting's I think is phenomenal by the actress. I forgot her name.
It's Caitlin Gerard, I think.
Yeah, I think she's been in another horror movie too. I beat it and I didn't write it down. Dang it.
Yeah, no, she was really good, and I think she was in one of the Insidious movies, maybe.
Yeah, Insidious 2, I think she was in.
Yeah, and I believe she's going to be in the new one coming out as well.
Okay.
But yeah. And she was in The Social Network, and she's been in a lot of, or a few, you know, some different things, but
and she's purdy. She's really purdy. Also, I watched... with Joe and Matt's recommendation, I watched Trick or Treat, the 2008, and oh boy, is that a good one! It's fascinating that I've never seen this film, knowing that there's like figures out there, and this is a cult classic. I can't believe this was pushed back and they didn't want to release it for a while.
They had Michael. I think his name's Michael Dougherty is the director.
Yeah, Dougherty.
Yeah, and creator of it, and he had a really hard time getting any kind of studio support for it. Obviously, they put some money into it because it looks fantastic. I mean, I don't think it's a huge budget, but it looks great. Like it looks like a Tim Burton movie, basically, almost. Mm-hmm. You know, in that kind of vein. Like it's everything is thought out. Every shot seems to have some sort of like Halloween theme in it, you know, almost.
And
you know, it's great.
Funny.
And
it's
they got
really
decent
funny.
Actors in it. I mean, they didn't skimp on that either.
Paquin and they had the fat redhead little kid from Bad Santa in it. It's really good. And why can't we live in a town that celebrates Halloween like they do? That would be glorious.
Change the
costumes
and the
costumes and
the parade. At the beginning of the movie, the whole street, it was like a parade.
Oh,
like
the streets
New Orleans.
Blocked off. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, hey, everybody's excited about it.
Change starts with you, Mark.
Okay.
Yeah, become the mayor of a small town, Mark, and you can do whatever
Halloween
you want.
Town.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I saw a movie maybe you guys have already seen before. It's called The Hunt. It was released in 2020.
Yep.
Have you guys
that
seen that?
Like
yeah, that
top,
was one of my top.
Yeah, it was
10.
In my top two, I believe.
Joe, yeah. When I watched this movie, I watched it for the first time, and Joe, when I watched this movie, I was going, Joe's gonna love this movie. Like, I mean, I kept on thinking of Joe. No offense, Matt, but this seemed like a Joe movie to...
I'm wildly offended right now.
No, you're not. Fantastic movie, complete satire. You don't know who's like the main character for the first 20 minutes because you think it's going to be Emma Roberts. You think she's going to be the lead and, you know, she's gone and... It was just really fun. It reminded me of like Cabin in the Woods and Hunger Games, I guess. But I love like humans being hunted in that sort of genre. What's that one movie? The Bellinic Project when they're trapped. Belichick. No.
Belko experiment.
I'm thinking of football right now. Belichick.
Belko experiment was also one of my all-time favorite movies.
Yeah, I love that movie.
Take that back. It wasn't in my top 10, actually. But it was in my top 15.
Yeah, it was fun. Talk about a girl fight scene at the end. Holy mackerel, that was a lot of fun. So, and I downloaded a game of Friday 13th, the game. I'm having a blast playing it. It's basically a hide and seek game. You could either be Jason Voorhees or one of the camp counselors. And I downloaded it yesterday, and I played probably like 20 games, and just the interaction with other people. There's one Jason who's, you know, just they have different like skins. You have like the right. Friday 13th Part 2 with the bag. Well, the one Jason that was chasing me was from Part 5, Rory, you know, with the blue, you know, chevrons. And I was like, Rory, you don't need to kill me. And the guy playing, who was playing Rory, Jason's going, who's Rory? I was like, he's from Part 5. I don't know. I'm having a blast playing it, so.
Yeah, it's a fun game.
Can you play as Corey Feldman?
No, but you can play as Shelley. You can play as Fox from Part 3. They put in characters from each of the different movies. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, you can play Shelley.
I haven't played it in a while, but I have it. And I played it there for a while. And then there's another game that's very similar to it. In fact, it's basically just like it, except that there are tasks that the counselors have to do to evade or to escape Jason. Like they've got to either fix a car or fix the phone, I think.
Solve a Rubik's Cube.
Or something like that. And then they can fix a phone and then call the police, and then the police will be there in like 5 minutes or something like that.
I tried to fill up a gas tank and I kept on messing up. And I guess if you mess up, it attracts Jason. So that's how I died.
That's funny. But there's another game called Dead. I think it's called
Deadlight.
Dead by Dawn.
It's very much Leatherface Freddy Krueger and that one. Yeah, that's Dead by Daylight.
You can play that one has different a lot Ghost more skins. Face. It's got Michael Myers. It's got all of the other killers. But it's basically the same setup and mechanics for the most part.
Well, just so you know, the people that made the Friday 13th game is making a Halloween game, Matt. It's in production right now. So
nice.
I'm sure. Yeah.
That's cool. Because the Dead by Dawn Haddonfield and you could play as Laurie or you could play as Michael. That's really cool. And it's not like a great reconstruction of Haddonfield, but it kind of looks like Haddonfield 1978. So it's kind of cool. Yeah. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Actually, I want to change my answer. I totally forgot. I saw the new Ghostbusters movie.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yep. What did you think?
I liked it. It was fun. It didn't exceed my expectations, but I don't know. I had so many people, like Mark, tell me it was just kind of meh that I went in with real low expectations, but I thought it was fun. I thought it could have used a little bit more comedy towards the beginning. They really hit it hard towards the end. Especially with the sight gag stuff, but it was fun. I thought the characters were okay. I still big fan of Stephen Paul Rudd or Paul Stephen Rudd, whatever his name is, Mr. Rudd. I thought the mom was hot. It was a good film. It was okay.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet, so I'll have to check it out at some point. Well, what did I watch? I didn't really watch many non-theme movies, but I did. Well, this is not horror, but I did watch Get Back, and I think we all watched that, right? Or Joe did, right? The Beatles documentary, Get Back.
I haven't finished it, but I'm most of the way through.
Are you warming up to it?
Yeah, it just took me a while to get. For the most part, I'm playing it in the background. It's not capturing my full attention, but.
I really enjoyed it.
I loved it. Just watching Paul McCartney just play with the piano and just start. You see him creating a song that is like beloved throughout the whole entire world. I get goosebumps it's really magical. And I'm gaining so much appreciation for Ringo. A gentle soul that guy has.
He's great.
That poor guy. Just dealing with the rest of the Beatles.
Yeah. No, he was great. And then I thought it was, you know, really, I thought there were just some really interesting things about it. And all these years, everybody bagging on Yoko as being the reason they broke up. She had nothing to do with it. And
had nothing to do with it.
Linda McCartney was sitting there in the rehearsals or, you know, sessions just as much as she was. And then George Harrison always had a couple of Hare Krishnas sitting in the corner. So they all had somebody hanging around. But for some reason, Yoko was the one who took the brunt of it, probably because she was, you know, a strong personality, I guess. I don't know. But yeah. I thought it was great. And watching them create these songs, that moment where Paul McCartney starts just out of nowhere, comes up with Get Back, like the chorus to Get Back. It's that gave me goosebumps. It was amazing. But anyway, of course, that's not horror. But I did watch another show. We're going to have to do an episode on horror TV and talk about shows. I mean, obviously we can't watch full series of shows, but talking about like our favorite horror TV from Buffy to, you know, and there's way more horror TV now than there ever was in the past. And a lot of it's really good now. And so I watched a series called Brand New Cherry Flavor that is on Netflix. And I had heard about it, but I'd heard something mixed from someone, and I'd heard some really good things from somebody else. And then I listened to a podcast that I listened to called All the Colors of the Dark, and they were raving about it and had the people on to interview them. So I like stopped the interview because they started getting into stuff I didn't want to know. And then Michelle and I watched it, and we really enjoyed it. It's such an unusual story. It's really difficult to explain, but this girl, she's a filmmaker, and she heads to Hollywood, and there's obviously something that she's fleeing, you know, and she's heading to Hollywood to get into filmmaking, and she's being followed by a guy on a motorcycle. And when she gets to Hollywood, she sort of befriends a producer who saw her video. He said, I never watch submissions. You know, like she submitted her video, her reel. He said, I never look at these. I always have an assistant do it. But for some reason, something told me to watch this, and it was fantastic. And I don't even know how you did it. And you never really get to see, you do eventually get to see what was on the video, but you don't at the beginning. You just know that something shocking is on there. And so he says, I want to hire you. Well, it also turns out that he's trying to sexually harass her because she's beautiful or whatever. And so he starts using that as an opportunity to get with her. She rebuffs him, and then he decides to hire somebody else to direct her movie. Well, a woman who kind of appears to be a bit of a witch approaches her and says, if you want to get back at him, come to me. And so she makes a deal with this witch. And at which point things start going her way. But when she needs the witch to do something for her, her payment is that she pukes up a kitten. And she pukes up a kitten and has to give the kitten to the witch. That's about as much as I'll tell you, because it's so bizarre. It's a little David Lynch almost, but it's a little more. It's not as dark as David Lynch, but it's got this weirdness. It's almost like Twin Peaks vibe, but doesn't quite go there. And it's a little funny, but it's really good though. We really enjoyed it and basically binged it over Thanksgiving week. So that I really enjoyed, and I think it's one, especially if you have a taste for the unusual, it's definitely one that you should check out, called Brand New Cherry Flavor, and it's on Netflix. So, and I think there's only like 8 episodes. It's very easy binge, and I think a lot of the episodes are only like 35 minutes. Some of them are an hour, some of them are shorter, so it's not at all hard to get through.
Okay.
Cool. And let's see what else. Oh, I've continued watching Dexter, the new season of Dexter, The New Blood, and that is a typical season of Dexter. Not great but it's keeping our interest. It's got that usual, you know, how like Dexter, you know how in the show he'll get into something or start sneaking around and it starts making you tense. You know, it's hard to like watch almost the tension. It's got that back, you know? So I really, it's good. It's not great, but it's good. And then,
I don't have Showtime, so I can't, I'm not able to watch it right now, but, I'm missing it because I'm trying to stay spoiler free, but it's not bad. It's keeping your interest.
It's definitely keeping my interest. It's okay. Not, I would, you know, comparing it to all the other seasons, it's not one of the best seasons, but it is better than like the last few seasons of that show were just, I didn't like,
I thought they were pretty bad. The last season, right? Like this is the final season. I don't know.
Like from what I've read, the showrunner wanted to come back one more time, but I don't know how it's going to end, what that means.
Yeah.
So they could, if they end it, you know, with him still alive and free, then they could always do another season. But if they don't, then, you know, it'll be whatever. But it's definitely worth checking out. And if you were a fan of the original series, you'll appreciate the opportunity to watch a good final season, if that's going to be their final season.
Yeah, he's such a good actor.
Oh, yeah. No, he's great.
Yeah.
I still have the problem with that show in that I think sometimes the narration, you know, they have, it's narrated by him, and sometimes it's just unnecessary, and sometimes I want, like, he'll explain an emotion that's happening right at that moment that I'd rather just see than have him.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You know,
yeah,
and so that was one problem I had with that show, is I thought the narration got a little overboard sometimes and a little too obvious at times. And it still has that same issue, but it's not, you know, it's not enough to turn me away. And we are like, you know, we wish we could just binge it because it is really good. So really it's not too bad, as long as you can stay away from hearing anything about it, especially if something big happens at the end of this season, then you want to plug your ears in that, because it would be a good one to just binge. Like if it was on Netflix, all the episodes that they release it would be a good one like that.
Matt, are you trying to tell us that you're spoiled now and all you want to do is binge? You can't wait?
No, but I'm saying this would be a good one if it was like that.
Right, gotcha.
Because it's each episode ends with a bit of not a cliffhanger, but it ends with I want to see what happens next, you know.
Right.
Let's see. And again, I'm also continuing the show Yellow Jackets, which is that one I told you about with the girls' soccer team that crashes someplace. It's still a big mystery. I have no idea what's going on, but there's obviously this place where they've crashed. Someone else is there, I think. You know, it's got that kind of, like, it's, if you ever saw the show Alone, it's very similar to that in some ways, except that we know that the girls were rescued at some point, because we also see them in present day. You know, and the actors are Christina Ricci and Juliette Lewis and, you know, other adult actors. So you already kind of know that they escaped or that they got rescued, but something happened when they were there and they don't want to talk about it. So it's still very much a mystery in that way as well. If it is actual horror, I'm not sure, because we haven't gotten to that point. Right now it's more of a mystery than anything. But I think from what I've read, there is it dives deep into horror at some point. So I'm looking forward to it. It's a good one too. So I think that's all I saw this week. And which I guess leads us into, ooh, those bells. What's the name of this song, Joe?
Carol of the Bells.
Tubular Bells.
Oh, no. Oh, wrong song. Sorry.
Tubular Bells. Wrong song. Tubular Bells. Yes. I can't even do it.
I'm not even going to try.
Did you guys ever hear the story about how they came upon this song?
How they came upon this Midnight Dreary?
The song Tubular Bells for the theme of The Exorcist. Yeah, William Friedkin, the director, came upon it in a box of music, basically, from what I've heard. and he found this weird album and just started playing it. And the song Tubular Bells is extremely long. Like, it's hours long. The guy who wrote it I don't know if he is like a savant or whatever, but he just continued writing and adding instrumentation to it and adding parts to it. But it's an extremely long song. So the part that you hear as the theme of The Exorcist is just a snippet of that. It's, in fact, it's kind of the beginning of that song. But William Friedkin found it and was like, this is the perfect theme song for our movie. And it inspired the Halloween theme. And
yeah, William.
Countless others.
Yeah, William actually had an orchestra, over 100 people, and they were started to do the soundtrack for it. And he had a total conniption fit, fired everybody, and then grabbed the sheet music and walked outside of the studio and threw it across the street. Just going, that's exactly where this fucking piece of garbage. This director has got some stories.
Oh yeah.
Oh my gosh, this guy is something.
He directed The French Connection, which has a really amazing car chase scene in it. And it goes through the streets of New York, and they actually crash into a couple cars in the car chase scene. All of that was just William Friedkin in the car with a camera and a stunt driver, and they were just driving as fast as they could through the streets of New York. The streets weren't blocked off. He is insane. And so he used some of that craziness in the directing of The Exorcist as well. He injured the main lead actress.
Yeah. Burstyn. Yeah.
Ellen Burstyn.
With the wire.
Yeah. Well, when they had a rope around her, mm-hmm. and they were pulling that one scene where she's supposed to go flying back from Reagan, they had practiced with it, and she kept saying, do not pull me that hard, don't pull me. And he told the guy, pull as hard as you can now. And they pull, and she actually got injured. And a few people got injured on this set.
Nine people died during the filming of this movie.
Nine people died.
I mean, they weren't all like, it wasn't like the script monitor and the grip and, you know, but it was, like, I think it was one of the key grips, had a baby during the shooting, and the baby died, and somebody else's brother died. One of the actors, was it Jack McGowan? I think, he finished shooting and then later on died still before the movie was released.
Yeah. There's a documentary about these legends that it's, I think it's on Shudder maybe, about the legends associated with a different film franchises, and the weird things that happened during the shoots for Poltergeist series and Exorcist and others. It's kind of interesting. Most of it is debunking most of them, but it's pretty interesting.
One other thing, speaking of William Friedkin, is he was sought out because of the fact that he's an atheist, and they wanted somebody who could have a completely non-biased opinion of, you know, good and evil.
So, oh, that's interesting. Yeah. It's just a fantastic film. I mean, it's, I can't believe that this was, what year did it come out?
1973.
I mean, there's stuff in here I don't think they would put in a movie today.
No.
You know, like the whole Jesus F you thing, you know, with the crucifix.
Lick me.
Yeah,
oh,
that whole thing, like, they wouldn't do that today. I don't know what audience must have been absolutely freaking out when they saw this back in 73.
Yeah, they were for like the opening screening, people were running out of the, you know, passing out, throwing up, you know, praying, you know, kneeling and praying. It was an incredible reaction. I mean, you just don't. I mean, can you imagine back in 1973 and watching that, not seeing any of the films that we've seen?
No,
right.
I mean, holy crap!
No, it's like it really is like an enormous leap forward. I don't even know what to compare it to, because I suppose it's similar. it did for horror what I think like 2001 A Space Odyssey did for like sci-fi movies. You know, it's just, it was a leap forward that was like beyond anything else, you know, way bigger leap forward even than Psycho. You know, Psycho was a bit of a leap forward, but this was so beyond anything that I'm sure any audience had seen before. And with it, then, you know, following this movie came movies like Last House on the Left. And I'm sure, you know, this made those kinds of movies. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, this made those kinds of movies even possible.
Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
I was going to say, I think the thing that's so appealing about this film and shocking is the unbelievable realness. You know, it's very, conceptually, this could happen, or at least that's what, you know, you're led to believe in the film. This isn't like a space alien coming down, or, you know, Dracula or a monster or something like that. These are real people that live down the street in a nice neighborhood. You know, this is a movie actress who everybody knows and is in the public eye, and, you know, very well off. You know, bad things happen to good people too. And, you know, here she is having a party at her house with all of her friends, and her child pisses all over the floor. You know, she's got to explain that to those people. Just as if, you know, the people sitting in the audience in 1973 have probably had, you know, dinner parties and their friends over and their kids act up. And they're like, wow, you know, they've acted up, but they've never, like, you know, stained a carpet. You know, this is actual stuff that's believable and could, you know, feasibly happen.
Right. Yeah. And it's and if nothing else, it's something that was a huge fear back then. And it spawned a massive satanic panic in the United States. Like, that if you grew up in the 70s, you know that there was this kind of thing was talked about all the time, and Satanism, and, you know, and obviously a lot of it was blown out of proportion, but you know, the idea of a possession and that it, and just even if it's possible or not possible, the fear of the possibility of your own child becoming possessed, is something that would be shocking. This wasn't an adult. This was a kid that was having these things happen to
him. It could be your kid.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's what I was. I hadn't seen this film since, I mean, the last time I saw this film was before my daughter was born. So this is the first time I've seen this, The Exorcist, now that I've had a daughter that's grown up. But just the heartstrings, I was going, oh, my God. I couldn't even imagine my daughter going through what Ellen Burstyn's daughter went through when this happened, when what Reagan went through. It's just absolutely excruciating to watch. Especially with just with the scenes when she's in the hospital and they put the needle in and the blood splurts out all over her, you know, gown. And, you know, you have all these technological, you know, hospital equipment coming down and with the sound going. That's horrifying, to say the least. And this movie is just fantastic. Joe, this was on your list. I think it's your number two or number one for your
all
favorite
time?
Horror. No, oh. your horror films. Was it one or two?
All time favorites?
I don't think it was in my top 10.
It's in
The
mine.
Exorcist?
Yeah.
For the horror?
Yeah, I don't think so. I'll have to go back and look, but no, Jaws is like my number one. Or no, I'm sorry. The Shining is my number one. Halloween is my number two.
Two.
It's my number three.
It's your number three. Oh, it was Matt. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. No, it's just, I've appreciated this movie a lot more just with the acting and whatnot, especially like Jason Miller. So subtle.
Oh, yeah. No, I thought he was great. And I thought it was a very, you know, it was almost like a De Niro kind of performance, or a brand. I mean, it's that kind of very naturalistic sort of a performance. And I thought he was fantastic in it. And every time I see it, I always appreciate that. But then you've got Max von Sydow, or Sydow. I'm not sure how to pronounce that name.
Sydow.
Yeah. He was only like, in his 30s when he made this, I think, or maybe 40. And so, but he looks like he's in his 80s. Of course,
yeah.
I always thought of him, you know, and it's funny because I never realized it was makeup for a long time. And then I saw him, you know, maybe 10 years ago in a movie or whatever. And I thought, you know, he looked about the same age in 1973 for The Exorcist. And I realized, oh, they put a bunch of, he was young. They put a bunch of makeup on him because he, I guess just because he's a great actor.
Well, I flipped out when I saw him in the sequel. And they show pictures of him, and he looks like he's 10 years younger. And I'm like, I thought he was older in the first one, and I thought maybe they did some sort of digital cleanup or something. Then I'm looking at the dates. I'm like, no, they couldn't do that back then. So, yeah, I had no idea he was young and in makeup the first few times I watched that movie.
Yeah, no, it's amazing.
Here's a fun fact about Jason Miller. Do you know who his son is?
Yeah. It's Jason Patrick.
From The Lost Boys, yeah.
Yeah.
And that was for you, Joe. That was for you, Joey.
And what people really know him from is Speed 2.
God, no. That's sacrilege. I have my limits. Sorry. Went off rails there. Damn it.
I will get back to Jason Miller.
I
can't think of another performance where you just feel it's so empathetic with what that guy is going through. It's just tearing your heart out, and his relationship with his mother and his conflicts with God and how can they do this to one of his creatures, and it's just the guy just emoted so well.
Yeah.
He's great in it. He was nominated for Best Supporting Actor for that role. I should have looked who won, but I don't know who would have beaten him on that one. Damn it.
Yeah, I don't know. But, he was fantastic. I think it was – no, it wasn't the same year as the Godfather. It was the year after
72.
The Godfather. Yeah. But he was – terrific in it, and so is Max von Sydow. I think the mom, Ellen Burstyn, is great too. I thought she played, you know, a mom whose daughter is, you know, I mean, in that situation, I thought it was very believable.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it was her screams when she really screamed and like she hit the wall. I thought it was a little bit over the top. Like she's screaming, you know, at her husband. You know, over with the operator. It's, I've been on the phone for 20 fucking minutes. And I thought it was a little bit over the top. But no, she's great in it.
I thought that was completely believable.
There's a scene where she goes and is yelling to Jason Miller about, you know, don't, you know, look at me and tell me that an exorcism wouldn't fix my daughter. Mm. Like demanding him to do it. And yeah, I love that scene.
Good.
She's
that was,
like
that was
frightening
good
in
scene.
That.
Yeah, no, I would think that someone who's going through this for months and months would have a short fuse for over anything, every little thing. My coffee's not ready! You know, I would think that would be completely believable.
No, you guys are right. You guys are right. I'm being nitpicky. I'm sorry. No, you guys are absolutely right. She's great in it.
And, of course, Lee J. Cobb, classic actor, the original Willie Loman from Death of a Salesman. Lee J. Cobb played the police officer.
Linda Blair.
Linda Blair,
kind of skips right over her. Yeah,
she's absolutely fantastic in this movie.
How they picked her, that the casting or whatnot? It was over 600 to 1,000 kids. They picked her. What
yeah,
a
she's
pick.
Great.
She's phenomenal. Just looks that she gives and just the effort. I mean, and how old was she when she did this film? Do you guys know? She was what? She had to have been like 13 or 14?
I believe she was, she was around that age. I don't remember exactly how old she was when she made it, but.
Unbelievable.
But she was fantastic. And
she was 14.
14.
Okay. Yeah. Golly. And I know that they did shield her from some of it, but I mean, like where the bed is flopping her back and forth, she got injured in that scene.
Mm-hmm. Severely, yeah.
Yeah. So
because the harness came loose.
Yeah.
And she was just like getting slapped back. Why they used a, because they took a form of her back and then so it would be molded perfectly to her and then they cast it in metal. Why would you use metal for that?
Yeah.
Crazy. But when the harness came loose, she's just slapping her back against the metal and screaming and crying because she's in such pain. And that's the clip that that's the footage they used.
It's hurting me. It's hurting me. Yeah. They used it. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Because William Friedkin's a dick.
Because he's a dick. He's an absolute dick.
Yeah, he's a madman.
He slapped a priest across the face to get into character. That's how much of a dick this guy is. He's going, you're not doing it right. He's going, and the priest is going, he's never acted before in his life. He's going, I've done 16 takes. I don't know what you want me to do. And then, of course, William comes up. He's going, do you trust me? He's going, yeah. And just hauls off and slaps him across the face. So when Father Dyer is over the priest that just fell down the stairs. He's going, his hands shaking because he just got slapped across the face. And this director, I mean, he's great, but boy, is he fooling himself in the documentaries I've watched.
Oh,
this guy is so full of himself.
He reads his own press, yeah.
Oh, he's wearing a black leather jacket. I mean, this guy is just,
he is his
not
biggest
a fan.
Fan. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Totally. Yeah. He's the kind of director that you just the end product is great, but the means to get there are other ways to do it, you know.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to point out before we go leaping to the next one, the writer, William Peter Blatty.
Yeah.
I had no idea he was a comedy writer.
What?
Oh, really?
His entire career was doing nothing but writing comedy. And then in the late 60s, the early 70s, for comedy writers, kind of dried up. So he decided he was going to try to make a go as a legitimate writer, and he wrote this as his first serious piece. He wrote the novel.
I did not know that.
Yeah, the novel took the country by storm, you know, and then when they decided to make a movie of it, everyone was like, how are they going to make a movie of that, you know? But it's crazy. And of course, the scene that in this that really gets me, and I would compare it to the scene, there are certain scenes in movies that you see and you're just in that scene and it gives you, it like takes you there and you're like, oh, now we're here, you know? And that is the scene in this, the power of Christ compels you. That whole scene with the levitation and everything is just a masterful, perfect, perfect scene. And in a way it almost makes the entire movie. Like without that scene, a lot of this movie falls apart, but with that scene, it leads to a place that really, I think the audience is right there with them in that moment. And it's such the way it's set up, the shot that was set up, it's just fantastic. It's masterful. And I would compare it to like the scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark where they open the Ark of the Covenant, or Jaws when he goes down into the cage, or I always think of Amadeus, that last scene between Salieri and the last few scenes between Salieri and Mozart where they're writing the end, or they're continuing to write the Requiem. Like those scenes, I just feel like there's such a culmination of stuff and then it brings you there and you're like, okay, here we go, you know? And I it's terrific, just terrific. I'd like to know what exactly happened in the bedroom that made the priest die. But it was, I mean, I don't really want to know because I like that the movie doesn't tell us. When you come into it, it's just a sick feeling, like that priest is just lying there and then she's in the corner kind of smiling like she did something naughty.
The most evil like smile and giggles.
And there's no injury that you can see. It's almost as if she just said something to him that killed him. And his heart would cause his heart to fail. So I it's just an absolutely terrific film. And then it gets followed up by
Joe's face.
Wait, hang on.
Joe's favorite movie.
I do want to point out.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
I want to. My one little disappointment in that last scene is with Jason Miller when the devil or demon or whatever is trying to take him over,
oh.
And his face changes, and then all of a sudden when he screams like to get out, right before he goes jumping through the window and down the staircase, it's just like a real quick cut,
yeah,
back to his normal face, and like no dissolve, no effects, no nothing. That's the only, like, I see that so quickly, and that's, it takes me out of it right before that amazing leap out the window.
Yeah.
So that's just my only nitpick about that.
Yeah, that
I just
shot.
Assumed it was him taking back control of his body long enough to jump out the window.
No, yeah.
But
it was, but it's that there was no transition. It was just like one frame he was evil, and the very next frame he was back to normal.
Yeah, it's, I know, you know what Joe's saying.
I'm conditioned to expect some sort of transition. You know?
Yeah, it 1973 film, can't have it all, I guess. But yeah. what a fantastic leap out of a window! I mean, that whole just so emotional, just great. This movie has definitely gone up in my most favorite horror movies. I don't know if top 10, maybe top 10, because after watching this film recently, I'm in love with this film. Really, really, truly.
Okay, we can talk about James Earl Jones.
All right, now we move on to a movie that probably should never have been made, but the
only thing I learned from this movie is that it's a terrible movie.
Were you expecting to learn something from it?
No, I expect to learn something from all movies, but all I learned is this is a terrible movie and should have never been made.
I had a lot of fun watching it.
I did too.
I think that it's insane, and I have no idea what the whole the whole concept of them having these things that they put on their heads to experience each other's thoughts, I guess, but they kind of go someplace else too, and it doesn't make any sense. It's not really set up, but
it's like a precursor to the Lawnmower Man,
I guess. It is.
Oh,
deep
dive there, Joey. Oh, with Pierce Brosnan and Jeff Feeley?
Yeah. Yeah. You mean Fahey?
Fahey.
And Pierce Brosnan?
And Feech?
Son of a bitch.
Feech?
I could have.
Feech!
I could have just shut up there. I would have been.
You mean Marlon Brando?
Yeah, you could have stopped at Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, we got to
review
the
pronounce
Lawnmower
that right.
Man. That movie's great.
Hey, English is tough.
Matt, The Lawnmower Man, like you're talking about maybe us reviewing like some like really bad movies. The Lawnmower Man should be in one.
Yeah,
of
that would be
that would
in
be
there.
A great
yeah.
one.
Lawnmower Man 2.
Yeah. Oh.
Is
they have a part 2?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's delightful.
So
Richard Burton's terrible.
You know what? Richard Burton, he's so out of place in this. It doesn't
he's
make
so
any
drunk.
Sense. And then he keeps going to that priest that's just standing in front of a giant mural every time he goes to see him. It's like that's where he lives, is standing in front of that giant mural.
It's like, all right, we need to build a scene here. Hey, you, okay, stand over here. Yeah, right there. Perfect.
Right.
Let's go. Roll it.
Yeah. It's like that's where he lives. He's Jabba the Hutt of whatever church that is,
right?
He's just always there. Yeah, it's not. But you know, Linda Blair grew up to be a very beautiful woman in this, as we learned. I thought she was very attractive, but unfortunately,
and a great dancer.
And she's such a good actor. Even in this, you know, there's not much to work with here. But I thought she did. I mean, to try and sell some of the lines she has to say in this, you got to be pretty good at it. But. One of the things I wanted to say about the original movie is that it really killed her career. It made her career and killed it at the same time because nobody could see her as anything other than Reagan. You know, I know she's had bit roles and she gets brought into movies a lot, like Scream. She was in Scream as a reporter and things like that.
Repossessed with Leslie Nielsen.
But unfortunately, she got not, I wouldn't say even typecast. She just couldn't really do much of anything after this again.
Yeah. See, I didn't. Is it, a lot of people make fun of the beginning scene where she's sitting down across from Nurse Ratched. What's her name?
Louise Fletcher.
Yeah. Louise Fletcher, who just won an Academy Award from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and then
right.
And then she's in this film. I didn't mind. I liked the strobes, actually. I liked the sounds where it would get even. And I was, I don't know, maybe
yeah, I thought
I
that was kind of cool. I mean, yeah. it's a, you have to forget that, you know, you kind of just have to go with it and not yeah. think too much about it. But yeah, no, I didn't mind
well,
that part
of it. I
didn't
think anything about it.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, I remember Matt texting in the Cinescare group text. He's going, they're filling her up.
With the, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, she goes over and has her hand on Ellen or on Louise Fletcher's chest. And it's the weirdest, it's weirdest placement of her hands in that scene. I'm like, yeah. She's basically got her hands just over her boob and not, what are you doing? Like, she wasn't holding her. She wasn't. It was like she was holding, like, feeling for her heart or something, or feeling yeah. her up. It was so bizarre.
And then Demon Reagan, you know, like, the faded-out Demon Reagan was doing the same thing. So she had both
yeah.
breasts being...
yeah, yeah. It was
like,
really
what?
Odd.
It was odd.
This was an hour and 57-minute train wreck.
It was,
it
yeah.
is.
It was a
it
way
is.
Too long.
Yeah.
Too, way too long.
Now, are the rumors true that the executives were chased out of the movie theater?
Yes.
It is true.
Yes.
Holy crap.
There was a screening of the film. I want to say it was in Chicago. And
of course it was.
So there were some executives that were going to go in for the screening. And when the executives pulled up, they told all their drivers, hey, we're going to be here a while. Go get yourself some fast food. They went into the theater, and somebody figured out that there were some executives from the studio in the theater, and halfway through the film got up and started yelling, hey, the idiots that are responsible for this are actually in the theater. And they were yelling and screaming at him and went to chase him out. These executives got up and ran out of the theater and then realized they have no ride home. Because their drivers were all at a McDonald's somewhere. So they just had to keep running down the street. Yeah.
Good old yeah. man. You got to love the 70s.
I know. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But I had a lot of fun watching it. It was way too long. I mean, I had fun for the first maybe two-thirds of the movie, but then it kind of started to drag, and I was like,
yeah.
oh, boy, if this was a half hour shorter, it wouldn't be a great movie, but don't get me wrong, but it would be a lot more fun. And in retrospect, I know there, and believe it or not, there's actually quite a cult following for this film as well. There's a lot of people who really do like it, but
probably
I don't
for the
quite,
dance scene.
Yeah.
The
dance. Maybe. Yeah. The
and,
dance.
And the saxophone.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but this was yeah. directed by John Borman, for crying out loud, who
yeah.
directed Deliverance, and right after...
And Excalibur.
Yes, Excalibur! I love Excalibur.
That would explain why Ned Beatty's in this film.
Yep. It's got a great
yeah,
cast.
Barely.
Yeah, he's,
in it,
yeah I know, he's barely
you hardly even see his face
right.
in it. He was like, yeah, come, you know, you just got raped by some... some hillbillies coming in this movie.
This is, they're all like blended together in my head. Is this the one with the terrible locust close-ups?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
That's, oh.
Well, how about James L. Jones' locust head hat?
Yeah. Yeah.
His party hat.
And then magically he's a doctor.
God.
I was so lost. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah, that was some horrible editing
yeah.
right there. I didn't even know what was going on with that.
Yeah, it's like the whole thing was just a two-hour-long fever dream.
It was a fever
yeah.
dream. It was.
But it's, you know, I did appreciate certain parts of it. I think as a whole it doesn't work, but there were scenes that I really liked. And
what? The man falling down like for
oh
about
God.
3 minutes?
Yeah, that falling was horrible.
It was the slowest fall I've ever seen in my life. Okay,
like
name another scene that you actually like in this film.
It was like the fall from Hot Rod.
Yes, yeah.
It was like that,
yeah.
So,
oh, man.
I don't think there's anything more to say about this movie. In fact, it's even hard to even latch on to anything because it's so so muddled and disjointed. But
the plot is
incredible. Yeah, and I don't. So that brings us to part three. Is part three a sequel to part two? Because I didn't see any moment that led me to believe that part two was necessary for part three. Or do you think part three is just a? I mean, they did call it three, but is it? Is it really acknowledging anything having to do with part two?
They wanted to call it Legion at first. And
well, that's because that was the book.
Yeah.
Was
they called Halloween 3. And that really didn't have anything
well,
to do with
true.
The first two.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
I think in those days, they just called it 3. If
yeah,
because
it's our third movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true. But I don't think it necessarily...
It's not
they
a sequel.
They don't reference anything. And
no.
The two main characters at the beginning, anyway, are the priest and the cop from the original. Not the same actors, but
It's almost like they just completely ignored the fact that number two existed.
I think so.
Yeah.
I would.
It's yeah. I mean, and
I wish
or
we
at
did.
Least
yeah.
There was no reason... not to ignore it because, you know, but what do they say anything about Reagan at all in part three? I don't remember them mentioning it at all.
No, they don't bring up Reagan at all.
Talking about the story. I mean, they bring up the original, but they don't really talk about her, where she is right at that moment.
Yeah. There's a thing that, I really wish because, they took out a missing scene from, the original Exorcist. And that was at the very end with, Father Dyer and the cop. And, basically, the cop is, standing outside of, Reagan's home and it's Father Dyer is walking away from the stairs and he turns around the corner and he meets the cop and they start talking about movies.
Yeah.
And
that was in the version I saw. I watched the director's cut.
Oh, the director's cut. Okay.
And that, because that one had and I'd never seen it, but that one had the spider walk.
Okay, yeah, I didn't watch that.
You should.
No,
or
no,
you
I did.
Have...
I watched it in the movie theater. That was the last time
when
I saw
out.
The Exorcist.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah,
but I just watched, you know, the original. I tried went, you know.
Whatever. Yeah, I watched I don't know how much of a difference there is, but yeah, they had that last scene where they talk about going to see a movie.
But it would have been nice because I had no idea in The Exorcist 3 that these two were from the original movie. I didn't get the Father Dyer that was in it, in the cop.
I didn't realize it until this time when I watched it. And probably that was because I watched the director's cut of the original and I saw that scene where they go to a movie and then they talk about going to movies at the beginning of part three. So then I was like, wait a minute, are these the same two? And I looked it up and sure enough, yeah, it was just with George C. Scott playing the cop instead of Lee Cobb, because I think Lee J. Cobb was dead by then. But and then the original priest was played by one of the doctors.
Priest.
No. The original priest was, but the original priest in part three, he was played by the one of the doctors from the TV show Saint Elsewhere, actually.
Oh.
But anyway, so part three was, I didn't love it as much as I did the first couple times. I saw it the theaters when it came out, and I've seen it maybe once since then, and I always loved it. You know, and I think I've seen it, parts of it here and there, and I've always liked it. Or you know, it's one of those movies that when you're flipping around the channels, it'll be on, and you'll just watch it for a while. And so I always had a better opinion of it than I felt from it this time, because I just felt like it was a little too talky and a little too long. And
Same with me.
This is another one that I think they could have cut about 20 minutes out of it. There are moments that I really liked that they took their time, like that whole sequence of events that happen around the time where the big jump scare happens, which I won't talk about too much in case anybody hasn't seen it. But there is a great jump scare in this film that happens at a certain point. And they really set it up with I don't even know how long that scene is, but it felt like about 5 minutes long of just the camera pointing down a hall while a nurse and a cop are basically doing their business, you know, walking around and checking rooms and everything. And then all of a sudden a jump scare comes. And when I saw that in the theater, it was, I mean, the whole crowd was, it was really affected by it. It was great.
I'm of the opinion that you could spoil it. For God's sakes, this movie is 31 years old.
All right.
You haven't seen it yet.
Well, basically I just said it, that scene with the in the hospital with the nurse.
You tell him,
out,
Matt.
You know, the nurse gets, attacked by something that looks like, I guess, a man in a nun outfit or something. And that was, I mean, that was really the scene that made this movie.
Yeah, it scared the shit out of me. I saw it in the movie theater. I was on a date. And I'll always remember this. No, maybe I should just shut up. This is going to be a joke on me. No, I'm going to do it anyways. So, I'm watching the film. And
I'm ready.
Before the scene happens, I'm on a date. She's looking at me. And I'll never forget this, what she said to me. She's going, "Your eyes look really, really pretty from the film. From the screen. It's sparkling." And I just looked. I'm like, "Oh, thanks." And I just start watching the movie again because it's a horror movie. I'm enjoying it. And I don't know if I should have made out with her at the time. I don't know if it was my missed opportunity. But anyways, I should have never even said anything.
Tell us more about random conversations you had watching movies.
I want to know about all your dates.
Jeez, this is what, Mark, you should have just shut up. But anyways, it was a really scary scene.
Joe, tell us about a date you had.
I did. Back in the
Tell us about it. Back in the Friday the 13th Part 8.
Yeah, because that's why, Amy Fennell, St. Pete Academy,
See, I was reminiscing. You didn't make fun of Joe.
Mark, I didn't say a thing.
I know. It's Matt this time.
I don't know. Joe's story probably went someplace that you know.
It did it. That's
Mark's,
the thing.
Mark's is all just about his own eyes.
Yeah.
I have pretty eyes. Yeah.
Well, the audience can't see them, Mark.
Yeah, they're really pretty in a dark movie theater.
But we're spellbound.
Okay, so anyways, let's talk about Brad Dourif.
Oh, he's fantastic. I love Brad Dourif. I think he's fantastic all
he's
the
great.
Time.
Sam, I'm going to say, movie. I really enjoyed this film up until his first scene. And then it's just monologue after monologue. And, I mean, until then, it was just a really kind of cool, whodunit serial killer on the loose thing with George C. Scott. And I was thoroughly enjoying it. And then, I've seen this before, but when I rewatched it, I was just like, oh, come on.
No, this is a common criticism with this film. And I think some people feel like they had a mystery going on. And then at a certain point, they just...
The
discarded
gone.
The mystery, and it turned into something completely different.
Yeah.
And I know that there was a big, and I didn't really look it up, but I know if I did hear something about a big problem with the studio with this movie and them not liking that it didn't have a huge, big, dramatic ending. But this was directed by the writer of by the author.
Yeah, they spent $4
William
million. Dollars.
Peter Blatty.
$4 million to reshoot the ending. $4
million. Yeah.
He even brought in the priest that died at the end. They brought
Miller,
him in.
Jason Miller.
Yeah, Jason.
Although that being said, William Peter Blatty, he wrote the original novel. He also wrote the screenplay and gave it to William Friedkin. And William Friedkin... threw it in the garbage. He said it was absolutely terrible. And then him and the author sat down with the novel and they just started highlighting scenes like, nope, we're going to use this. We're going to use this. So he's, according to William Friedkin, he's not the best screenwriter.
Yeah, maybe not.
He should go back to comedy.
This movie definitely was a bit talky. It's a little like a play in some ways, but,
I didn't enjoy this movie as much as I did before, just as you, Matt. Yeah,
I didn't either.
It didn't stick with me this time.
I didn't really watch the prequels at all. Did you guys?
Oh, yeah.
I did.
Well, I watched the one of the two. I couldn't.
Yeah, because there were two. There was the beginning, and then there was Dominion, and they're basically the same movie, but with different directors handling them, right?
Yeah, one of you two needs to tell our listeners that story. I'm still
okay,
fuzzy on
it. I got it. I got this. All right. So I wrote this down because my brain can't keep a thought in 5 seconds.
That's okay. Yeah, just do it.
All right. So Morgan Creek Productions, who owned the rights to The Exorcist, commissioned a bunch of writers to write a screenplay about Father Moran, who did an exorcism that almost killed him. That was basically 4 lines in the original script. So they picked out one of the screenplays and then hired John Frankenheimer, who directed classics like The Manchurian Candidate back in the 60s with Frank Sinatra and Janet Leigh. He also directed Black Sunday, Ronin with Robert De Niro. So Frankenheimer started casting. He gets sick and leaves the film entirely and eventually dies. So then Morgan Creek Production hires Paul Schrader, who wrote Taxi Driver, Bringing Out the Dead, The Mosquito Coast, and directed the cult classic, the 1982 cult classic Cat People. Paul Schrader makes the movie that cost about $35 million, and Morgan Creek reviews the movie and thinks it's not as scary enough. So they fire the editor and try editing it again, and they watch the movie again and are completely dissatisfied with the film. So they fire Paul Schrader and show the film to a bunch of directors. And lo and behold, they hire Rennie Harlan. And he's the director of such classics as Die Hard 2, the director of Cutthroat Island that I've never seen, Deep Blue Sea, and Cliffhanger, really great guy there. Director. So Rennie Harlan agrees to do some reshoots. The problem is that some of the actors couldn't return for the reshoots, so they recasted some of the actors and basically started redoing the movie entirely. So Stellan Skarsgård was pretty pissed about that, but he worked with Rennie Harlan already with Deep Blue Sea. After shooting Harlan's movie, it cost an additional $45 million, combining with Dominion's cost. So the whole entire cost was $80 million. Rennie Harlan's film domestically made $41 million, but worldwide they made $78 million, around $2 million short to breaking even. So Morgan Creek was like shit. We're close to breaking even. So Morgan Creek gets back to Paul Schrader and says, here's $35,000. Do what you can with it. And they were going to release it direct to video, but they released it in 300 theaters. And guess what day they released it on? They released it on May 20th, 2005.
May 20th.
May 20th, 2005.
Joe.
Well, wait. So
don't you say your name is your buzzer?
Matt.
Wait.
May 20th.
May 20th,
2005. What day before was released?
May 19th.
19th.
Right. What movie?
The Turquoise. The John Chandler story.
No.
Bring It to the Electric Boogaloo.
No. In 2005, May 19th. Revenge of the Sith was released,
released the same
weekend. So this movie made $250,000.
I would never have guessed that, Joe. By the way, never.
No. $250,000. This movie was made, and that is how these two prequels were basically made.
So
thank you for that.
Thank you for that Exorcist 3 length monologue.
You son of a bitch.
So basically,
I worked hard on this.
So basically, they made a prequel to The Exorcist, and then they didn't like it, so they made another one.
They made another one. Yep.
And then both got released.
Yep. So
Mark's got a novel in front of him.
They made one. They didn't like it, so they made another one. Didn't like that one.
They got the original guy
to come back and make another one.
Yeah.
So.
Well.
Good job, Mark.
But good job.
No, very well researched. No,
but look, it's fascinating.
I never would have guessed the Revenge of the Sith. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, no, but there's...
May 20th.
Can you guys recall any movie that has the same, basically, script, two different directors, but the same actor in it?
Yeah, no.
I mean, you can't. You can't do it. You can't do it.
Yeah. Even Dracula, they got a different cast for the Spanish version.
And I think they just proved why you can't do it, because they're both terrible.
Yeah, they're both horrible.
A bad movie is just going to be a bad movie.
Yeah.
Did either of you... I don't think we need to spend much time on those, because I didn't watch the prequels this time, but I have watched at least one of them. I think I watched Dominion, and it was just okay. I didn't love it, and it was overly long again. But
just for the folks that haven't watched it, basically what we found out is there was a location where Satan had fallen from heaven.
It's Father Marin when he was younger, right?
Right. So Father Marin, when he was younger, gets sent by the Vatican to go explore this archaeological dig, which we find out later is where Lucifer fell from the heavens and landed onto Earth. And the Catholic Church, well, actually some precursor to Catholicism, they built a church onto the spot where Satan fell just to... I don't know, cleanse it of its unholiness or whatever. And so they've unearthed this church that has no earthly being or no earthly reason being on the planet. And there's no record of it. Nobody's ever heard of it or seen it, not even the Catholic Church. So that little headpiece that you see in the beginning of the original Exorcist from 1973, you see where they got that. That was part of that archaeological dig. Other than that, the rest of the movie is not worth mentioning.
Yeah, no, it's really not. Did either of you get a chance to watch any of the TV series?
No, I did not.
The Exorcist? Okay, I watched season one, and it was a Fox show, and it comes off as a network show. But season one was pretty good. It had Gina Davis in it. It has, I don't know anybody else in it, but pretty good cast. But Gina Davis plays this woman, and I don't remember the name of the character. But as the series goes on, you find out that Gina Davis is actually Reagan from the original movie, and her daughter has become possessed. So at the beginning, Gina Davis's daughter has become possessed. They get these priests to come in, try to do an exorcism and figure out what's going on. And then they realize, oh, she's Reagan. And this demon is still trying to get to her, or the devil or whoever it is still trying to get to her. And so it was a pretty good series. I'm that's a bit of a spoiler, because that was a bit of but I had a feeling that's who she was the whole time. I predicted it. And so it's that information comes out early on in the series. So once you get past that, then it's about them trying to exorcise this demon.
Wasn't Gina Davis married to Rennie Harlan?
I don't know.
Director,
you're right. This is a huge cast. It's got John Cho in it, of Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle fame. It's impressive.
Really? I don't know who he was in that.
He was Andrew Kim.
I mean, it's not a celebrity cast except for Gina Davis. But you know, the actors are fine. There's nothing terrific about it. It would be I think if they had made it a cable show or like an HBO show or something like that, it would have been pretty good. But because it was Fox, it's just when it's a network show, it's just a different beast altogether. And the only network horror show that I really thought worked well was aside from of course I love Buffy, but aside from that show, Hannibal, I thought worked really well, but most don't, especially Fox shows for some reason don't work well. And
Hannibal's great.
Oh, Hannibal is fan fantastic. Oh, I love that show. I hope they find some way to bring that show back.
They got to put it on Netflix. Netflix has got all the money in the world. Just grab that show and just embrace
it. I know they keep talking
please.
About it, and I would love to see it because that was a really good show.
Oh,
But it's worth checking out, I guess, the first season. I did like it. I didn't love it, but it's worth checking out, especially if you're really into the whole Exorcist thing. And season two, I didn't continue. We started watching the first couple episodes, and I just lost interest in it. So I don't know if there was a third season or not, but I guess, you know, we're kind of running out of time, but did either of you watch any exorcism-related movies of note or have any that you like?
You mean like The Exorcist Shark?
Yeah.
Did you watch it, Joe?
Did you watch it, Joe?
No, I didn't. I didn't. I totally forgot.
I'm very disappointed, Joe. I thought that would be something you'd watch.
I watched it during when we were doing the Jaws episode.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did.
How bad is it?
It's
worth
watching.
Is it worse than The Exorcist
2? No, it's better.
Wow.
Is it as bad? Oh, it's better than The Exorcist 2?
Well, no, because some of the shots in The Exorcist 2, it's not that bad.
Was it better than Santa Jaws?
Yeah, he didn't watch much of it.
I only watched like the first 15 minutes of Santa Jaws.
Well, it couldn't be any worse than that.
It's something. It's something, but...
Yeah. All right, well, I did have an exorcism story, but it's really not worth getting into, and it was the original story that The Exorcist was based on. But I'll just summarize a little bit. It was... actually, there was a guy back in 1960, a kid, the story that the Exorcist was based on was the story of a boy, and he was 14 years old, I believe, 15, something like that, and he was possessed, and they had an
from a Lutheran family.
Was it a Lutheran family?
Mm-hmm. They were Lutherans, yeah.
But I think they had Catholic priests there to do the exorcism. I don't know, but...
Yeah, there was. They were a Lutheran family, and the Lutheran priest tried doing something because there were poltergeists around him as well. And then that's when the Lutheran priest basically said, "Look, we don't really have any expertise in this. You want to get this taken care of? You got to go to the Catholics."
Yeah,
and so they referred them to a Catholic priest.
And eventually, I mean, it took a long time. I think they were in Washington at one point, and he was in a hospital at, like, Georgetown, and then they were in St. Louis, and it took quite a while for it to be handled. But apparently, I think most people assume now that these things are really just mental health disorders. But in this case, the exorcism seemed to have worked because he went on to live, from what I read, a productive life and had a family. But he did keep his anonymity, though. He didn't want, especially when the movie came out and everything, he didn't want to be associated with it. So he lived a fairly private life, but a productive life, and apparently had no real problems again after that. So...
Happy ending.
Happy ending, eh? All right, well, we don't know. We do know what we're going to do next time. We are going to do each of our top 10 horror movies.
No.
What's
I thought
wrong?
That's...
No, Joe.
The next one was
Joe's,
my pick.
Joe's...
And then the one after
Joe's
that...
Right, but I thought...
One after that would be our 20.
Okay.
Because the next one...
So you want to do the...
Next one's Joe's choice.
No, I know that. I know, but I thought we were going to do the favorites of the year this time, and then Joe's choice after that. But that's fine. You want to do the year roundup in January?
Yeah, because there's still 3 weeks of December. I might have some new favorites. So.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's true. Yeah. All right.
So what is it
going to be then, Joe?
I'm all locked and loaded.
Joey,
I got a Christmas gift for you
guys. Come on, Joey.
And the best part is, there's only two movies, and they're both on HBO Max.
Let us know. What is it?
We're going to watch Gremlins.
Yes!
All right. Yes! All right. Gremlins and Gremlins 2.
And Gremlins 2.
Gremlins 2 is so good.
Yes. So Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Joe. I'm actually really pumped for this.
I haven't seen Gremlins 2 in ages,
it's
and I'm
so
looking very
good.
Forward to it.
I haven't watched it in ages, too. But we got Corey Feldman coming into the conversation.
Yep.
Oh, shit, that's right. God damn it. Joe, god damn
Despite
it, Joe.
Despite that, I still wanted to watch Gremlins.
Merry
yeah.
Christmas, Mark.
All right, fine.
Oh, all right, my
yeah,
God.
No, I, actually,
my
I don't think I've seen that movie since it came out, I think.
Which one?
Either.
Plus, you two, assuming I get it in the mail in time, will be receiving a package that you are not allowed to open until we record next.
You stole fancy schmancy. What's that all about?
Yeah. What? It's a secret.
Well, does that mean...
Our listeners will just have to tune in next time.
They're exchanging Christmas gifts?
It's not really intended that way, but if you want to call it a Christmas gift, then fine.
Okay. Yeah, damn it.
And it's nothing big. It's more funny than
okay,
anything.
Okay, good.
So. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, then next time will be Gremlins for
yes,
Christmas.
Joe.
A little Christmas horror.
I'm
and,
so excited.
And, of course, that'll free us up to watch... That would actually free us up since there's only two
Yellow
movies.
Jacket.
It'll free us up to watch Yellow Jackets for one thing, but also any other horror movies that we need to catch up on. I know I haven't seen Candyman yet, and I'm sure there's one called Gaia that I haven't seen yet, and there's a few that I haven't seen this year that I know were on other people's top 10 lists that I've looked at, so... Good enough. All right. Well, and again, Joe Jans has put together a website for us called CineScareHorror.com, and that is where you can find all of your CineScare goodies, including all of our shirts and other merchandise that you can link up there, and our episodes are there. And I'd like to, in the new year, add a little more content maybe of some kind, and we'll figure out what. And I don't know, Joe, do you have any plans or any thoughts?
No.
All right. Well,
not as of yet, but I'm open to suggestions.
Yeah, we'll come up with something and let you know what it is. So I guess until next time, and it'll be what? Christmas? Yeah, the week of Christmas.
It will be
for
our episode will come out on Christmas Eve.
Ooh.
Nice.
Joe, right? Bringing, yeah, is that yeah. Right? Wait a minute. Because we're, yeah, the 21st will be that Tuesday, 22nd, 20, yep, Christmas Eve. So
nice.
That's very exciting, Joe.
Yeah.
I've never been so thrilled for Christmas in all my life. I feel
excited.
Like, yeah. All right. Well, that's it for this time, and we will see you next time.
Good night, Brian.
Damn
Good night,
it.
Brian.
Lick me, lick me. Oh, my God. They used it. It's hurting me. It's hurting me. They used it. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.